Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. April the 1st, Monday evening. Edwin's with me. Hello, Edwin.
I'm not really here, Martin. It's April Fool's.
Exactly. I've been watching a few of the stories coming out today and thinking, is this true? Is this true? Or is this an April Fool? There was one running on British radio this morning talking about a Dutch thing called Nixon, which is the state of not doing anything, as though this is somehow a new thing. I'm thinking that sounds a little bit like April 1 to me.
Oh, look, it's one of those things. But the question is April Fool's is making a Victoria great again? Is that an April Fool's joke, or is this for real, Martin? You know, it's a 50-50 call here. You know, is Jim up to become premier? And if he does, Dusty and Evan want to pack their bags up and they want to take me down to Melbourne if he does become premier.
Yeah, I'm a little sus on this. I could be wrong, but we'll see, I guess. But, we will show later that Victoria continues to disappoint in terms of what's going on property-wise. And the latest CoreLogic data, again, showed no price growth in Melbourne. We're continuing to see, of course, more properties coming on. And I've had, more than a handful now of people in the last week, all property investors in Melbourne, all desperately trying to list their properties and get out, all for the same reasons, you know, that we've discussed previously, Edwin, that it's more and more difficult to make an investment property work thanks to the changes in regulation, thanks to the pressure on the costs versus the rents. So I would say that this validates what we've been saying for quite some time.
100%. This is something that that you and I have been ahead of the curve in many stories that are only just coming up in the mainstream media now, and you start seeing a lot of the demise with regards to the housing crisis and the rental crisis. I mean, if you recall, I was showing some of the videos of the makeshift granny flats in the western part of Sydney and in the Mid Mountains region. Back as April 2022, and even before that, when we were talking how things were going to change and they were going to change rapidly, and here we are. This is, and it's only now that you're getting stories in the mainstream media, Channel 9, putting up a story about a house in Auburn that they're charging $750 per week, and it's an absolute it's derelict, and they advertise it as recently renovated. Well, if that's a renovation, I'd hate to have seen it before it got renovated. The renovation may have been a full clean out of all the crap that was in the house. It's absolutely diabolical. But all these things, all these pointers that we've had, is because of the chatter that we've had, that we the chatterers that contribute to the show, the Silent Tigers, also, what I used to call the Chinese whisperers, the people that we have in the inside the banks that tell us things, Bob the Builder, and all these things. And this is where our followers and our friends and watch the Monday Evening Property Rants, they can see the changes ahead of ahead of the Tom Panos indexes and the Mark Boris's indexes and every other index that's out there, or every other woodpecker that wants to think that they're they can challenge what we say. It is what it is. This is we're only sharing. This is the funny thing, is that we're just sharing information. We're giving it to people ahead of the curve. We share funny stories. We share serious stories. We call things in terms of where things are going. We dissect the surprises that the mainstream put out there from time to time, just to sway and persuade the markets. I mean, you call me on the, you've called me for many years, many years. Part of the insider, the industry insider, and this is what I bring also to the table is stuff that people through the education that we've taken them through over the last 5 or so years since we've been doing these rants and these chats with yourself, where we've been taking them through an education process as to get a better idea and understanding of what happens behind the scenes in my industry. It is my industry. It's cost me dearly, Martin. It's cost me dearly in terms of relationships with friends, old friends, acquaintances. It's cost me dearly in terms of business because I've exposed certain truth, the shenanigans that vendors get up to with selling agents and property managers get on with with landlords. So it's cost me in that sense. But you know what, Martin? It's a new era now. It's a new era of information. It's a new era of it's a turning point. I mean, it's Resurrection Monday. It's new. We've got to look for the good things and the good information and the great information that's out there to have a better outcome for ourselves moving forward, because we are the authors of our future, right?
Well, that's right. And I think that you and I have been, ahead of the curve on so many things over recent times. And I get a lot of very positive feedback, both through the socials and direct on the emails, from people who actually said that they've made better decisions because they've been listening to what we've been talking about, which is great. And, you and I both have that same wish to help people make better decisions, property-related decisions specifically. And with the information flows that are out there, a lot of people, I think, are getting misled. Remember, of course, a lot of the media is actually hand in glove with the property sector directly. They own property portals. And a lot of the spruiking that's actually in the mainstream media is directly from the property people that actually have a vested interest in talking property hire. But it is also just worth thinking about this, Edwin, that if you think about it from a overall financial pressure question, this is what I try to do in my analysis, and some of the most recent information that has come up, we ain't seen nothing yet. So we see that banks are now talking about putting interest rates up on credit cards, remarkably, despite the fact that you'd have to say that the trajectory of interest rates have not changed in recent times, and people are expecting them to go down. Or if you look at this one, this is actually on the cost of living. Aussies skip meals to save. Young Aussies and low-income workers are skipping meals and spending up to a quarter of their income on groceries as the cost of living crisis continues to bite. That's really, really important. That's from a survey from the ACCC. So that's an official source. All the health funds, they're putting, believe it or not, another chunk of costs on health insurance costs. So all the costs that are actually piling on people are actually driving more and more people into difficult situations. So one of the things that I had to come up this last week was a couple of people from the renting sector saying, we've given up on trying to rent. We're actually going to try and buy anything. We want to try and buy anything just to get out of the rental sector. And I'm really worried about that, because in the backcloth of all those cost pressures that are building, and the rental pressures too, the question is, are they going to jump from the frying pan into the fire?
And that is a tricky one. That is the whole dilemma that many are facing. And this is why we've got so many people not wanting to even sell, because they need to buy on the other side of that equation as well, and the cost to transact is a huge, which then worsens the situation that many of those that want to buy the first home have got. There are a lot of variables, and this is why we bring them all to the forefront, so that people can understand the different dynamics and the different, as we said, the different people that influence the different markets. Yeah, so it's hard. I mean, this whole thing about rising costs of living, it's making it harder for people to save, in order to save a deposit. That is to move into a home. They're doing without, which is a shameful state of affairs when you've got a great nation such as ours, and so many people want to come over here, which is one of the reasons why we're in a lot of hot water in terms of property, right? Because they've opened the doors to so many people from abroad, and these people have got a lot of coin behind them in order to jump the queue, per se. So you've got all these things. I mean, when you talk about costs, you talk about health insurance, you talk about dental, you talk about my insurances were due last week, and one of the things that I took note, apart from professional liability and my PI insurance, was the insurance on the vehicle that I use for business purposes, and that jumped 33%. Now I can absorb that because obviously I'm running a business. But what about all the the people that aren't running businesses and they have to travel a long way in order to get to public transport, because public transport isn't that easy to get to move around in this great city of ours, unfortunately. They forgot to design better public transport system as the city grew. So we're really. I was only talking to a friend the other day, and I said, "Look, Sydney, in my view, was planned and designed not for public transport, but for people to have private transport and public transport and all these eco-efficiency things just an afterthought in my mind, based on the way that the ad hoc." Way that we've designed the city and the outskirts, and it's still growing, but there's not really much out there in order to help and assist. So, but why is it that we are where we are, and why is it that the circumstances that we've discussed over and over again continue to play out? And that is because we go back to one central point, or one central point of focus, and that is the ignoramus, stupid government policies, that they just throw ad hoc to win elections, preempting an election, or to win brownie points with a certain demographic or certain group of people in order to keep them in the job. Hence the reason why I jest and I joke about the fact that I say that being a politician is being a part of an industry, is an industry in itself. It's a great way to have a job for life, and a great retirement. You can retire with great benefits. If Alvo, coming from a housing commission background, can end up with a portfolio of probably close to anywhere between 7 million and 10 million dollars, and retire with 350,000, if not more, per annum. I mean, there you have it. There's your career path. Because I know a number of doctors that don't have those sort of portfolios. I know a number of doctors that are trying to buy their first homes. I know a lot of professionals that have been gone to university and have studied for have got masters that still don't have a home. They're still trying to save because they've the families are. The way things are with the families, and there's only one income coming into the house. The politicians seem to have it all, Martin. So and this is why we say what we say in the many forms. But going back to that point is that ad hoc government policies, and immigration being one of them, that's putting a huge damper on how this country moves forward. But look, regardless whether it was the Libs or the Labs, it was always going to happen. As you and I broke the story back in 2019, when the WeChat chatterers that are involved with with migration law firms and migration agents, when they told us that the PR pathways had changed, and not only that, but we also spoke about the. Following from that story was also the story as to how the government was going to ease, if you recall, was going to give them double the tenure once foreign students obtained a degree, a master's, or a doctorate here. They were going to double the tenure for them to stay. I mean, we broke that 12 months before, 18 months before the mainstream even knew about it. And this is why I get excited about sharing on the Monday Evening Property Rants, because we're able to put our followers and our listeners ahead of the curve, and also share the stupidity of the industry. And none other than the tweet I shared last week, which is with relation to dummy bidding, and I titled it "A Bunch of Dummies."
Yeah, it's worth just talking about this for a second, isn't it? Because dummy bidding and how the whole bidding process works is actually really, really interesting to try and tease apart. Not least, of course, because people who perhaps don't go to auctions that often assume there's a certain set of logic in the way that the bidding system works. But in actual case, in reality, things work rather differently.
Yes, one of the things that many people unfortunately assume, Martin, and as Ben Hill used to say, never assume, because you make an ass out of you and me. So they assume the fact that the selling agents are telling the truth. They assume the fact that the selling agents are on their side, and that they follow the law. 100% of the time. Now, this is in a group meeting, or what we do is the continuous professional development, the CPDs, that we are obliged to do by under our regulations to do on a yearly basis. And this is was a week or two ago, when I went to do my CPDs for the year. And I met up with a whole group of different selling agents, and and we just got most of them were this is for the tiered now, the licenses are tiered, so this is for the class one licenses, I hold a class one license, so and a lot of them are licensees in charge of offices that were there. So we started talking about contract was the CPD, and in that conversation, I throw in a few things here and there in order to sort of get the goss of the industry, right? So I threw in a curveball, and I just said, out of curiosity, guys and gals, if somebody's holds the bid, and is actually the hammer drops on that. On the last bid, and that person holds the bid. If they walk away, are they liable to purchase? What do you do, right? Just to get the discussion rolling, because I mean, I wasn't going to go in there and say, how many, hands up, all those of you that know or have come across dummy bidding. So I threw that one in, and there was a bit of discussion for about 5 or so minutes, and then of course, then I just went in there with what I really wanted to know, and I said, okay, well, because we one thing led to another in the conversation, and then then as soon as somebody brought up the area of dummy bidding, and then I just went moved on from there. But it was interesting as they say, if I could have only had a camera rolling at that time in the meeting room. It was fascinating to listen to what they had to say. To one was the fact that they've seen more dummy bidding over the last few years than ever before. Secondly, we're talking about over the last 12 months, 6 to 12 months, there's been some people involved in dummy bidding that these are from licensees in charge of what they've seen with their own eyes themselves and what they know about in their own in that in the area where they work. Where families have bought in dummy bidders, in some instances colluding with the agents, in other instances, obviously, the selling agents not even knowing. But the interesting thing was the best of those stories was where the dummy bidder that a particular family bought in without letting the agent and the agent got all excited about the price. That he felt that they achieved a huge price for the property, $150,000 or so above what he believed the property was worth. And they went inside to congratulate them, only to find out that the vendors were the brought in other friends to be the dummy bidders, except this time around the dummy bidder got got to win the prize, Martin. So but I've heard this stuff before, but it's not until you're in a group, and as I said, to when you start talking to a greater number of people, that it becomes frightening. And this is where we say, where are the regulators? Yeah, they throw in policy, they throw at you a different industry's policy, they throw in different acts and regulations, and this is, but they don't police it. So what's the point?
What a regulator's there for. And it comes back also to this point I made a little while ago, Edwin, that people who are rocking up at the auction assume that there's a certain set of logic in play, when in fact those in the industry know that what's actually happening is rather different. And I think the story of the dummy bidder ending up with, oh, I didn't mean to own the property, is a really important point. And of course, it's true, isn't it, that in some cases you can have the auctioneer throw a bid into the system to try and sort of kick-start it off and those sorts of things. And I still think there are examples when auctioneers are getting bids off the wall. I know they shouldn't do that, but I've seen some quite clear evidence over the years that they do that, anything to sort of try and create the drama of momentum. And as you and I have said on many, many occasions, and I just want to reiterate it again, the problem with an auction is that you can get caught up in the moment, and whether you're the dummy bidder or not, you can actually end up stepping over what is a fair and reasonable value for the property that you're buying. And of course, then you've got a problem, because if you end up with a property that's overpriced, what do you do? So this is a really important object lesson in being quite cautious in an auction context.
You hit the nail on the head, Martin. This is why you need to set your mark before you even start bidding at the auction, and that's what we do with our clients. And unless I get clear and better instructions, not only from one of the parties, but from both parties that are going to be on title, husband and wife, or both partners, I don't move. I've even had arguments with my clients at the auction. Not arguments, but debates. And I've had, in one case, in 2020, I actually got the one of the parties to call the missus there and agree on me putting an extra, throwing in an extra $15,000 to chase somebody with deep pockets. So that too, they had very deep pockets. We were never going to get there anyway. But people get emotional. They do all sorts of things in relation to the dummy bidding, Martin. I know for a fact, and there is an office, in the West that's kind of really under investigation. That's been, that's on the table with Fair Trading at the moment, with in relation to dummy bidding. They're being dobbed in by one of the competitors in that area, because from what I'm told, one of the office staff members been trying to buy a house through that through the other office, and they've pointed and we've got the dummy bidders on tape. So my understanding is, from what I've been told, is that Fair Trading have got those tapes and they're investigating it. But look, outside of that, I know that there are professional dummy bidders in the North Shore, with some of the Asian offices, and there are also professional dummy bidders in the eastern suburbs. So these are people that get paid to come in and but this is playing out. And the unfortunate thing is that unless you really piss somebody else off in your patch, let's say, unless one selling agency is really got it in for another selling agency, it doesn't move forward. They talk about it, the industry talks about it, but it really doesn't move forward. This is why I say that New South Wales Chris Meng needs to bring in the minister for better regulations, needs to push for New South Wales fair trading to come out and inspect like they now are doing over in Melbourne, actually attend the auctions on the day. Because not only has underquoting has become a handful, and it's happening more and more. You'd think that with the amount of demand right now, you'd think that selling agents would stay away from playing those shenanigans, but they don't. They don't. It's like cocaine to a drug addict and or meth to a drug addict. They just got to do it. It's almost like it runs through their veins. And if they don't do it, it's not them. I don't understand it, but we called it. We said that it was going to get worse as with the greater demand, they get away with it even more. So this is why I've been saying that without having the body that's meant to be policing the industry, without having their presence on the Saturday at particular auctions where they can see that underquoting was a play, they could, the old saying goes, if it looks like a duck, if it walks like a duck, if it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. And it's not hard to work that out by even the postings online, by the advertising that comes through. And many people have tagged fair trading on the on X, and I'm sure they're aware of it. But until you get those, until you get that change in the way that the industry is policed, no different to policing the rent rolls, no different to policing rent rolls and going through in more detail. The condition of which properties are being presented to the general public as rentals, Martin. This is it's got to happen. We've got to have a transition. We, as you say, stop it. We've got to stop just having these announceables from the politicians. Actually, get them to do something that means business. Otherwise, things aren't going to change. How long have we been talking about the minimum standards to bring in minimum standards in New South Wales? There's such a pushback against bringing in the minimum standards. Look, it hasn't worked out well in Victoria. It hasn't worked out well in Queensland, but not because they're not welcomed. It's just because the way that they're being delivered, the way that they're being bought out. And without any real education and real addressing the real issues, again, ad hoc. But yeah, there are good propositions on the table. But you've got to bring in the people that are going to be able to execute those propositions, like David Shoebridge is in the construction sector.
Yeah, absolutely. The more we talk about this stuff, Edwin, the more hopefully those following the show will, be sensitized to some of these critical dynamics that we come back to. But there is a huge, huge hole, isn't there, in terms of the way that the industry is supervised and the whole concept of, self-management and self-supervision is at the heart of the problem. It hasn't worked. We saw it fail across the construction sector with self-certification of buildings. And we see it also week in, week out on the front line of property sales. There has to be better oversight to make sure that people are actually getting what they should be getting from the industry. Now let's move on a little bit and just talk about the WeChat chats because there's quite a few interesting threads going on there. Not least, big debate about do I take a haircut or not?
Yeah, look, that's been discussed for a while now, but this is just in a prelude to the real story that we wanted to share about the with what's happening over in China with the WeChat chatterers from there. It's rather interesting. But look, the the preamble, I guess, is people having to seeing the economy, how it's affecting. These are business operators in this particular group. These are the majority of them are business operators. And wait for it, these are business operators that actually hold PR here in Australia, but they operate a business over there, and they haven't fully migrated over to Australia and bought all their assets over here because they've got big businesses over in China, and it's not as easy to sell a business there. It hasn't been as easy to sell a business there over the last few years, and also get all your money out. But they've got to make a decision now. It's damned if you do, damned if you don't. More so, damned if you don't, because the discussion that was being had on this particular group was people are having to take a 30% to 50% haircut on the principal places of residence over there, as well as investment properties, which is a lot of money. That's a huge haircut. But what's the alternative? As they were saying in the, as Dusty was telling me, they were chatting away on WeChat, and that is, what's the alternative? Wait 12 months, 24 months, and then have to reduce your price by 60, 70%. Walk away with 30%. They've got to bite the bullet, because as far as they're concerned, that whilst there is the geopolitical situation that China's got itself into, and this standoffish approach that they've taken to America, and as we spoke from a couple of years ago, we were talking about how China was decoupling from the West, as WeChat chatters were telling us that, and again we were the first to start reporting on that, and the many internal thing policies that the government was bringing in order to decouple from the West, it was rather interesting. So all this is playing out now, years down the track, as to how it's affecting people. But the interesting thing, Martin, is that, as I said, these are chatterers that have got PR here in Australia and got big businesses over there. And guess where most of the conversation was? Well, basically, look, take that haircut, because whilst you're losing over there in China, you may have lost 30% to 50% the value of the property where you believe the property is worth. But the opposite is happening here in Sydney, and the opposite is happening in Sydney, where if you bring that money over to Australia, then you park it in property here in Australia. Well, it's increasing in value, because it's totally the opposite to, not so much the economy, but the property market is totally the opposite of what's happening over in China, where you're seeing huge property rises in many markets of the Sydney Belt, because of the lack of supply and the huge amounts of demand. So this is, but again, this is nothing new to our followers, because we've been bringing similar stories and similar news from the WeChat chatterers. So this is one side of the coin. I don't know if you've got anything to say there before we bring up the second part of that segment.
Well, just to say that certainly from the feedback that I'm getting in some parts of Sydney, some of the more cashed up people are still those bringing money over from China, or already have money in Australia with Chinese connections. And some of this is also not necessarily straightforward, because some of the structures that are being set up are actually trusts and things like that, which actually provides them even more capacity to buy.
Yeah, and this goes back to what we discussed before as well, with the bear trust, where people are just holding on. I call them syndicates. I call them syndicates, goodwill syndicates. Shit, you got to have a lot of goodwill in the individual that holds your money when they're overseas. But this is the nature of, you understand more about bear trust than what I would ever do. But this is it. This is how it's happening. But let's not forget that the one of the main points also with this is that, although say two and a half years ago, there may still be, many were still aspiring to go back to, take the money back to China and do something there, and things were going to change after, reopening after the pandemic and so forth. But it hasn't. It's gotten worse. And this is why you've got that Ranjua philosophy where they want to, again, we brought that up before the mainstream were talking about it, before others were talking about it, run away. And so where the mainstream media talking about, people taking money back to China because to rescue the businesses there, man, that's a lot of bullshit. They don't want to take the money back there. They want to park it elsewhere. A lot of it's now parked in Singapore. And it's making its way to Australia. A lot of it's gone to European countries as well, because it's easier to bring the money from Germany, from Singapore, from other other European countries that you can't they won't just bring it directly into Australia. And a lot of the money that gets parked into the in the property by way of the bear trusts. They this is there's a hell of a lot of money coming in, and until the Foreign Investment Review Board, until the policing structures here again start really biting hard on the many different ways that money's coming into it's unfortunately, folks, prices in a number of capital cities around Australia where the Asian community, what the Chinese community want to park their money, prices just going to continue to rise in a lot of the markets in those cities. Sydney be one of them. And they could leave the homes vacant. They could, because their reasons for buying is not, it's not the reasons that you and I would buy as a principal place of residence or even as an investment property. And they do totally different things with it.
Spot on. And as we talked about previously, those agendas are quite different, and it produces a different lens through which you value a property and all of those things that follow it. And the net result is many first-time buyers and many Australians are being squeezed out. But being talking about squeezing out, the other story, which I thought was really interesting from China, is the switch, the major switch from some type of computing platforms to others.
Yeah, basically the big conversation that's happening now is around the the headline to that story is no more Windows, no more Windows, and basically no more Intel CPUs. This is where China are just basically focusing, and in this particular department that this individual shared on one of the WeChat platforms. One of the WeChat groups, he's talking about his department, and he's done it incognito as well. And I don't know whether it's a him, I'm just referring to as a him, the person's that incognito, and saying that this particular government department is going to do a transition to the full operation system, Chinese CPUs, Chinese operational systems. As I said, no more Intel, no more Windows, no more this, no more that. They basically want to go full steam ahead with just using China. But this is the some of them are praising the Chinese operation systems and the computers and the CPUs and everything. But others are that are more in the know are saying, yeah, but yeah, it's a maybe a great system for word processing. Or simply, doing Word documents, but that's about it. Everything else is just not compatible with the system. And this brings about a new fear with a lot of the people that are there in mainland China that are running businesses that are relying on Windows, that are relying on operating systems from abroad, that it's going to be they're going to be hampered, or they're going to buy a new system as well. Because once the government says if this is what you're going to use, you got to use it, whether it stays in the cupboard or whether not. So it's a huge expense to a lot of businesses, whether it gets used or not, or you have to pretend that you're using it. That's just the way the system works there, apart from the people that are supplying these new Chinese-made computers, components, and operating systems are members of the CCP, families that are members of the CCP. So, say no more. But the takeaway from this, Martin, is that the chatter amongst the general business owners there in this group, basically again highlights the fact that there's going to be more of an appetite, more of a push for people as they see that China is going backwards, at 1 million miles an hour. There's going to be more of a push to basically run, continue to run and leave China. And how does it affect us? Again, it comes back to, you've got to ask yourself the question, when you can't, when you do get out, when there are people that are able to take the money out, doesn't require a lot of people to take the money out. Well, when you compare it to the population comparison between Australia and China is huge. You only need a small percentage, a fraction of a percent, to then direct and divert those funds here to Australia. It's a different ballgame again. But this is what's been playing out, and this is what again is influencing our property market here, from all angles.
Yeah, well, we'll continue to watch this trend because I think it is part of the bigger question about the Chinese economy. You know, they're continuing to throw sort of levels of support, and they're talking about maybe more quantitative easing to try and support momentum in China. But there are some very considerable questions about that, not least, of course, because the property sector, as I said earlier on, is still looking pretty weak. And the disconnection between some of the technologies used in the West and China is also another factor there. So very fascinating times. And it's also worth noting, Edwin, that some of the iron ore prices and some of the other prices of some of the other commodities continues to drift lower because the supply-demand disequilibrium in China is getting more extreme. So we'll keep an eye on that. Now, talking about extreme, we should probably make a bit of a transition to talk about Cameron Murray. I had Cameron on my show on Tuesday. Of course, he wrote the book, released book recently called The Great Housing Hijack. He was on ABC Q&A on Monday and came on my channel on the Tuesday. And I know you were in the chat there and you were making some very interesting and important points because Cameron has got quite a distinctive view in terms of says that, well, the property market is broken. It's broken considerably because of the long-term relationships between the construction sector, the finance sector, and the government, you know, the big end of town. And therefore, his argument is, and still, unless there's a change of interventions and a change of strategies, we're never going to fix it. So I had him on my channel, Fixing Housing After the Hijack. And we went through various different thematics on that. One of them, of course, was his view about superannuation. So he's saying, you know, maybe we should use super as part of the story to try and help the you know, first-time buyers get in. But I know you've got a slightly different perspective on some of those things, so I'll let you pick up the reins and take the conversation forward because, unfortunately, you know, in the chat you can only say so much.
Yeah, it was an interesting conversation that you had with Cameron. I've read a number of his posts on X and some of his papers. Look, I'm happy to sit, for you and for you to put us together and have a more in-depth discussion. But on face value, from the conversation that you had, I came up with three points. One is, just because you worked in the marketing department of a building company or development company 20 or whatever, 25 years ago, doesn't make you a property expert. Yeah, because some of the stuff that's put out on X or some of the things that are put out, from an academic point of view, yeah, everything looks great on paper, Martin. Yeah, that's what I keep on saying. Everything looks great in a textbook, pictures and all. But from a practical point of view, I think you need to center the discussion a lot more in terms of the demographics and the demographic shifts around different parts of Australia, because you can't even just look at Sydney. If you're going to look have a if you're going to label yourself as the fixer of the property market or the rental market, you can't just, which goes to my second point, you can't just be focusing on what's happening in the Gold Coast to determine how the rest of Australia is functioning or moving or going to move or going to shift, which I thought was very disappointing from that. Again, I'm happy to have a more in-depth discussion, but look, I've also seen some of his posts and I've read some of his stuff regarding, he centers a lot and he focuses a lot on the Singapore market. I don't know whether Cameron's even gone to Singapore. I've spent a bit of time there and I've worked with real estate agents there in Singapore, and I've got a bit of a handle as to how things happen there in Singapore with regards to, housing, and the government's focus on housing for the local Singaporeans. Chalk and cheese when you compare it to Australia, from a geographical point of view, and also as to, what they're allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do, who's allowed to buy and who subsidizes it. And I guess the third point was really one that I'd go to toe to toe with anybody with regards to using excess money. I understand his point that, at the end of the day, the super that's out, we've already been taxed on, and we should be able to use it more to the point, which I do agree with him in that we should be able to use it for many other things. But when it comes to using it for housing, when it comes to using it for focusing on super to be used as housing, if that's you and I have spoken about it in the past, and that is, it's really just going to feather the nests of the construction industry, just going to feather the nests of the vendors when they can up the prices once this is let pass. So I think the argument there is moot on a lot of things with regards to the way it's going to be used. But look, I can go back as far as 20, probably perhaps a little bit earlier than 2012, 2013, when I put out a simple, I've shared it on our show before, a few years back. I shared the article. I couldn't get my handle on it today to put it up again today. But it's an article that I shared with regards to what the governments really need to do and the LGAs really need to do in order to make it more affordable for housing to become more affordable for the first home buyers. Because my beef back then, or might have been the article, might have been a lot earlier than that, than what I'm thinking, is, was again, he was talking against the first home buyers grants and all these incentives that the first home buyers were being given, and all that was doing was just inflating the prices of property, back in the early 2000s. So, and my argument in my article, that I put out in one of the magazines, that I shared in one of the magazines, was really what we really need to concentrate on is reducing the duties and the taxes on new builds in order for builders to have more of an appetite to build. Because when you look at it, post-purchasing of the land, there's 37 to 42% of the cost in building goes to stamp duties, taxes, GST, and everything else in between. So if you start reducing that, you will start getting more people that will have more of an appetite, or medium tier builders that would have medium density builders that would have more of an appetite to build, because there's less money that has to that forked out of the pocket to build, because things will be a lot cheaper, and the end result will also be a lot cheaper. But so it's really all about where Cameron and I do stand on the same on the same platform, and that is that we do need to make property a lot cheaper. We do need to make property a lot more accessible to the first home buyers, and those that want to come into the market. But using outside monies, if I could call it that, using outside monies or other monies, without reducing the duties and the taxes that builders and developers have to pay. It's just really throwing more wood at the fire, pouring more petrol on the fire when it comes when the demand right now is so much higher, than supply. I'm of the opinion, and I've put it up on X, 18 months ago or so. I said that in order for this beast to be quenched, we really need twice as many properties on market than we have. I put it out then, and we were running about the same amount of properties on market than what we have now, which is running about 15,500 properties on market in the Sydney region. I mean, when you've got so much high demand, you're just going to give more incentives. I think it's the wrong view. That's just my opinion. I mean, he's got his, I've got mine. I haven't written a book on how to solve the crisis. I just just a small Joe in the industry, Martin.
Well, all opinions welcome on this channel, and I suggest that people go and listen to that show. It's a good 1.5 hours worth of discussion. I thought that Cameron had a much greater chance of explaining his thoughts on my show than on the Q&A on the Monday, because the politicians were just all over the place. They denied any fact of migration having an impact, and they also were
Exactly.
in denial on a lot of the other critical issues, things like land banking and those sorts of things. So actually, I thought the Q&A was very, very disappointing on the Monday, although the pain of prospective purchasers absolutely came through in that Monday show, and it's something that we've been reflecting on our show here. But at least on the Tuesday show, Cameron was able to walk through the arguments, and we tried to sort of take a sort of a broader view. So I'd recommend that people go and listen or watch that show. There's a big debate to be had, but I don't think the politicians are doing us a great service at the moment. And just to sort of underscore that, Edwin, is it worth just looking? This came through. This is from Tasmania, Hobart. Hobart buyers now need a starting point of $87,000 to purchase a typical house, according to recent analysis. Massive upfront costs for buyers. And this is, Tasmania is meant to be one of the cheaper areas to buy. But they're showing how stamp duty and the other costs are absolutely, crushing a lot of people. And I think that actually Tasmania is a little bit of a bellwether at the moment as to what's going on, because property prices there are continuing to fall. People are continuing to struggle to be able to get into the market. The first-time buyers are struggling. Even the rental market is all over the place. And in fact, my stress metrics are quite a lot higher in Tasmania than some other places. I'll be talking about that in a next week or two on my show. The other interesting observation, another piece of information that came up, was this empty properties conversation, which didn't come up on Monday in a way that I thought it should have. But this is actually talking about the ghost homes that are haunting Sydney, 43,000 ghost homes, according to a recent survey in around Sydney. Now, we've been talking about the fact there's a lot of vacant properties around. The fact is that it's really, really a significant issue. Why? Well, in some cases, it's because people are holding properties, not actually trying to live in them. And we're seeing that in Melbourne as well. Another reason, of course, and this is actually an example where developments have been left dormant for years. So there's a lot of properties that essentially nobody is able to get into, despite the fact the properties are finished. So, to my mind, one of the other political discussions that should be very active at the moment is really getting to the heart of vacant properties. Because according to the ABS, we've got about 1.2 million vacant properties across the country. Now, even if half of those were actually legitimately vacant, that gives a significant proportion of properties that still could be brought into the property system. And that would actually put a huge amount of support for the rental sector in particular. So that might actually cap rents, but also perhaps help the market more broadly. So, for my mind, the other sleeping story is vacant properties.
Yeah, you've got a lot of developments around Sydney. You've got a number of developments that I'm aware of. For various reasons, they haven't been completed. Most of the time, it's because they've got disputes. The builder's gone, pushed the boundaries a little bit too much. to the point where they're debating with the local councils whether or not they're going to be given the occupation certificates or not. There's one in Greystanes, there's one over in there's one that's been it's not even near completion over in Carlton. There's a few that come to mind. With the ones that you see that are completed, that's usually if you look at the Fair Trading Register, there's a lot there. There are quite a number of buildings that David Shoebridge put a stop work order on them and put a make good order on them as well. So for various reasons. But yeah, with regards to the established dwellings that have been that have been sitting vacant for years and neighbors and people don't know what's going on, you can bet your bottom dollar it's what you and I've been discussing. Yeah, the various reasons why overseas money bags are just parking the money the money here in a lot of a lot of areas of Sydney, because I think that article was more reflective of Sydney than in a lot of other cities. But yeah, so you've got a lot of different things. I mean, the thing that comes to mind, whether it's the it's your Catherine Cashmore 1.2 million dwellings that are vacant, or which we lean a little bit more towards, or whether it's the Kooks 430,000. It's a hell of a lot of vacant dwellings either way, at the top end of the scale or at the bottom end, right? That could be very, very welcomed into into both sides of the ledger, whether it's for sale or for lease.
Spot on. Well, I've always thought this was a critical issue. Let's just move into the numbers briefly. Of course, numbers are now sliding. So this is Sydney on the 25th of March, 16,040 properties. And if you jump forward to the 1st of April, 15,852. Of course, that's what you'd expect now as we move past the peak of the summer. And in fact, your trends are now showing that things are continuing to be pretty problematic in the Sydney region. And Melbourne, actually, by the way, is, well, similar story, 26,589 compared with 26,587. So a little move, but not a much of a small. So I thought that's quite interesting, Edwin, insofar that the Sydney and Melbourne story does seem to be continuing to depart, with the volumes dropping more in Sydney than in Melbourne. The Melbourne story continues to be, of course, driven by some of the local problems. And of course, as we said earlier on, well, maybe this has something to do with it too. Who knows?
And well, I thought we'd be a little bit more upbeat in the get out of Victoria segment. This is a good way. Like, if Jim gets elected, I changed the photo that he put up on X about Jim for Premier. I put go all the way, Jim for PM. So I said, there you go, fixed it. Time to rebuild Australia. So there's a good see. We can be upbeat when it comes to Melbourne. It's not just doom and gloom in Melbourne.
Very good. Well, let's just quickly jump forward and look at Brisbane. So this is properties for sale, 3219 on the 25th, 3151 on the 1st. So again, a slight easing as you'd expect. And of course, the auctions, well, funny week with the holidays. So, the 30th of March was pretty low. The next for the 6th of April, a bit more of a momentum, but not as high as we saw previously.
No, it was a run up to get in early before a week early before the Easter long weekend. Hence the reason why we saw these huge numbers, and we've just come back to what we more or less were trending before. But look, regardless, the numbers have come up. There's whether you sell by auction or sell by private treaty, there's a lot of demand out there, and the sellers have really got to decide whether an auction's the better campaign to get. To get a better result in terms of where I'm seeing auctions being brought forward by a week or even 2 weeks in some cases because the vendors the agents are pushing them for a quick exit. And I'll share a story. I won't go into too much detail, Martin. I can tell you now. I participated for a client. In an auction in the North Shore, and I got given the green light to spend $75,000 more than what we got the property for on the evening of the auction. Had the agents been a little bit more prudent, had the agents worked, not being so eager to sell the home a lot earlier, they would have got a lot more from everybody present. Of course, a lot of it had to do with the strategy that we adopted as well on the evening. But unfortunately, because of the, you could say, because of the greed of the selling agents and they want to spend the commission a lot earlier, it cost their vendor, $75,000 that we were prepared to pay. Who knows how much more the others were prepared to pay if they allowed the campaign to run its growth, to run its course.
Well, object lesson there as well. Let's just quickly move on to the rental sector. It's still looking pretty sad. 8,477 properties for rent in Sydney on the 25th, compared with 8,272. So the numbers of rental properties continue to slide. In Melbourne, 8,267 on the 25th in Melbourne, compared with 8,241 the following week. So the story continues to be, I think, that the rental sector is under huge pressure. The most interesting data out of the CPI, apart from the massively high hike in insurance that you touched earlier on, was that rentals are still rising faster than last month. So we're still seeing huge issues, and I think the rental sector is still very much looking very sick at the moment. A lot of people are really struggling to find anywhere to live. No wonder that we're seeing more tent cities and more difficulties. And as like I said earlier on, one of the outfalls of that continues to be that we're seeing some people desperate to buy almost anything just to get out of the rental sector. And unfortunately, some of those purchases that I'm seeing coming through at the moment, well, they do look a bit dodgy. And you got to say it's really important still to think about buying quality property at whatever price point you're looking at, because the trouble is that if you buy a dog on day one, it remains a dog, and you end up with a lot of costs, a lot of difficulty to be able to deal with later, and you might even not get any capital growth or as much capital growth. So don't bounce yourself into just buying anything is my message of the week, but you've got another tip as well.
Yeah, look, the I guess it sort of goes along with what we were sharing earlier on, Martin. It's been a bit of doom and gloom for the property sector for from the beginning of the year. Things are going to get a bit colder. There's going to be a lot, a lot less listings, and the demand isn't going to ease, not in the near future, I don't believe. But look, at the end of the day, there are still pockets of Sydney, if you look a little bit further afield, and you could turn this whole darkness, as I said, this is more, where, I've heard many say today, being Resurrection Monday, let's call it. So you've gone through the pain, you've gone through the darkness. Now, it's time to start writing your new tomorrows. It's a new lease. Look at it as a new lease. And start looking a little bit further afield, but cautiously looking at perhaps, like you say, not it may look like a may, may look like a the property's had a bit of use wear and tear, but just don't go into those dogs that you so Martin, because that is where you can come unstuck. Don't be reluctant to spend that little bit extra in getting your own building inspector, and not relying on the agent's building inspection, personal building inspection report, when you are in the position that you're in. There are some little gems out there that don't need a lot to fix up, but just be wary and be cautious that you're not getting thrown into. As you know, getting thrown into a lemon that's only going to be a money pit moving forward. Yeah, so stay positive, stay hopeful, and things will change. Once your mind changes, your mindset changes, then things start changing around you as well.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is attitudinal. I agree with that. But it was interesting that this one came up recently, tree change towns under $600,000. So Elizabeth Redmond suggested that there are some affordable regional towns where prospectively you can buy a little more affordable, although of course you still have to find jobs in the area. So as with always, look for the silver lining. And you know, I think that the takeaway message is, Edwin, that there is still a set of logic to be applied whether you're buying whatever you're buying, wherever you're buying. Make sure that you actually do your due diligence. And we've highlighted that in past shows. Go back and check some of those out. But we'll be back next week for another rant. And of course, as always, there'll be plenty to discuss. So I look forward to that, Edwin. Have a good week meantime and happy Easter.
All the best to you, Martin. Look after yourself.
See ya. Take care.